Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PFS Global Support Podcast. Our mission is to provide support, guidance, and coping strategies for thousands upon thousands of men the world over afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. While medical researchers are learning more about this devastating condition in an effort to cure it, we're here to listen to your experiences, share them across borders, and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle this growing epidemic and put an end to it for future generations.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Nader Jawad calling from the gorgeous, gloomy state of Michigan. I'm your new host, and I'm excited to give this a go for my first time. Before I go into my personal story, let me start off by saying what PFS, or post-finasteride syndrome, is. It's a condition caused by 5-AR reductase, by, you know, the inhibiting 5-AR reductase inhibitors that's used to stop hair loss. Basically, you know, hair loss medication, Propecia, finasteride, same medication. And it was originally developed for enlarged prostates for older men. And then in 1997, they wanted to basically prescribe it to younger men in hopes that, you know, it would stop hair loss, because that was one of the side effects noticed with older gentlemen who were given it for prostate issues. Saw it as a great way to make money and stop hair loss, and it was kind of a no-brainer for him to do it. The thing is most people still today in the year 2017 do not know what post-finasteride syndrome is, and it's kind of sad because they should by now. I mean, when you go up to someone and you tell them, you know, I'm suffering from an STD like AIDS or herpes, or I'm suffering from cancer or a brain tumor or, you know, some sort of serious disease, you know, terminal or non-terminal, you know, their jaws drop. Like, oh, my God, blah, 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 this and that, I'm so sorry. And, you know, they wish you the best and they can't believe it. But then you go up to someone and you tell them you're suffering with post-finasteride syndrome, they kind of scratch their head and they're like, okay, you know, they're like, oh, my God, that's terrible, but what the hell is it? Well, that's something that really needs to change. You know, that's something that we got to change on our part as a community, and I believe that can be done, but it's going to take time, and we have to reach out and educate people about it and let people know what it is, and we got to continue to, you know, make people aware. We can't hide in the shadows about it, because that's not going to get us anywhere. It is a real thing, and it's sad because a lot of people in the medical community don't, you know, think it's a real thing, even till today. You know, I've had this condition now for a year and a half, and many doctors I go to and tell them about it, they're like, you know, either they don't know about it or they deny it. They're like, oh, well, yeah, millions of men are on it. But the thing that they're not aware of is out of the millions of men that are on it, tens of thousands have post-finasteride syndrome. And many of them don't even know it because they associate the side effects of post-finasteride syndrome with the side effects of major depressive disorder or anxiety disorder, or just say, oh, I'm aging, so this is a normal process of it. It is not a normal process of aging. This is damage to our bodies caused by a medication that we took for cosmetic purposes. It is a very threatening condition. It's not just life-altering. It's also life-threatening because of the simple fact that the side effects from it are so devastating that a lot of these guys end up in basically like a state where they can barely move. You know, they can't run. They can barely walk because of the neurological and physical damage they encounter from this drug. Not just sexual damage. There's a lot of cognitive, physical issues that they're experiencing, including myself. Let's see. I mean, when you look at this whole situation, men do need DHT in their body. We need our 5-A reductase inhibitors. 5-A reductase, when you take these inhibitors, they have the potentiality to cause a lot of damage, a lot. And that's what happens with some of these guys, millions of men will take it and they'll be okay. But then, you know, you have thousands that take it and they get these side effects that do not go away when they stop taking the drug and get stuck with them for years on end. So it's like, I mean, the hormones for us is like a computer chip or a processor for the computer. So, I mean, it's like, it's a big thing. The root cause of post-finasteride syndrome is still unknown. And we don't know when, you know, we're hoping with studies that something will be found. But it's still unknown. There still is yet no effective treatment till today on this condition. And we don't know when there will be one. It's just a matter of time. But in my opinion, I do think it's a very fixable condition, given the fact that neurological and hormonal. So it's not as if it's something that we can't go back and correct. You know, the way the best example I can give to people who don't understand post-finasteride syndrome is I tell them, imagine you have a woman who's an athlete and she takes anabolic steroids. And it gives her emasculating effects on her body. You know, she has shrinkage of her breasts. Her muscles get more toned. Her voice deepens. She grows hair on her body. She has her clitoris grows a little bit larger with a penis. That's very similar with post-finasteride syndrome. Post-finasteride syndrome is a reversal where the guy will experience, you know, shrinkage of the genitals, where the man will have a, you know, enlargement of the breast, gynecomastia. But the thing is, it doesn't just end there. There's the cognitive issues, the depression, the anxiety, the function, you know, cognitive function, being able to do day-to-day activities normally. It's affected my ability cognitive. Like I've had, you know, cognitive issues because of it. I'm still able to function day to day, but not like how I used to. It's also hit me physically very hard as well. A normal male with normal levels of testosterone in his body and proper DHT will function like a normal male. You know, he'll have a normal appetite, a normal sex drive. And when he's given synthetic tests, what happens? That appetite goes up, the sex drive goes up, his mood usually improves. Usually. Now, a male with post-finasteride syndrome will not respond properly to testosterone in his body, whether it's synthetic or just naturally made testosterone. His body doesn't have that ability because our 5-AR enzymes, the receptors, are damaged. But there might be more to the story than just that. Now, on to my personal story. I'm currently 28 years old, medication in June. Or like May-ish, June 2015, with the hopes that it would stop my receding hairline, because it was receding a little bit, you know. It wasn't terrible, but it was receding. I did a more preventative measure. And everything was going, you know, everything was fine. Summer was great. I was out and about. I was jet skiing. I was boating. I'm a big sports car guy, so I'm always into that stuff, racing, car collecting, you name it. I traveled a lot. I worked a lot of hours. I was working an average of 10 hours a day, going to the gym 2 hours a day. I had a girl I had to keep up with, and I was juggling a lot of things, and I had no problems. You know, I was great. I had so much energy. I'd go through to sleep 6 hours a night, and I'd be great. Whereas nowadays, I'm sleeping like 8 to 9, and I'm still tired. So I took this medication, and I didn't feel much early on. I didn't feel like anything wrong with me early on, but, you know, July comes around, I'm okay. August comes around, I'm okay. And then maybe in August, I noticed that I was a little more edgier than normal, which for me wasn't quite, you know, what I'm used to. But I dismissed it as whatever, the summer heat or something. And then September rolled around, And that's when things really got rough. I noticed I was having like paranoid thoughts and like anxious thoughts all the time for no apparent reason. Everything, when there was no real stress in my life, everything was going great. So I didn't really put that together. I thought maybe it was just a season changing, you know, the leaves turning, you know, from green to yellow and orange. So I thought, you know, that's totally normal, whatever, it'll pass. But then the days went on, it got even worse, worse. And by the end of September, I went to go see a doctor, and I'm like, I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. You know, I feel like I need, you know, like I need my antidepressants. When I was in my teen years, I used to take SSRIs, but I haven't taken those in a while, and he put me back on them thinking that would help, and it didn't. So, you know, that's a thing. I didn't know what was going on. I was going through like a major mental breakdown, but that wasn't all I was experiencing. At that point, I was also noticing I was having sexual side effects too. And I did not get it because even with my past history and anxiety, I've never had any issues sexually, which to me was weird. I was like, this isn't normal. So I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe my testosterone levels are low, and it turned out they were normal. They were over 3-something, so that didn't make much sense. And then I did my homework, and I found Propecia Help online, which for one is not the best built website. They definitely need some work on that. And it said, you know, what these guys are going through. And I was reading stories of guys who've had it 6, 7, 8, 9 years, and they're still dealing with it, and my jaws just dropped. And the side effects that they were listing, I mean, they were unbelievable. They were like, you know, penile shrinkage, your actual tissue shrinking, gynecomastia, spinal issues, vision issues, sleep issues, appetite issues, cognitive issues. A lot of them couldn't even drive. A lot of them, you know, couldn't even put few sentences together. It was just, it was terrible. And I was like, wow. You know, a lot of them are also complaining that their faces had changed, that they actually had, you know, like demasculization of their faces. And I was one of those guys who got hit in the face with that. So it's, you know, it was just, wow, it was mind-blowing just to read it. I was completely shocked. I was like, how could any one medication cause this to somebody? But it really can. And it's nothing that, it's nothing to joke about, and it's nothing that's like should be taken lightly by the medical community. This condition is extremely, extremely, extremely serious, and it's not something that people can just brush off and be like, "Oh yeah, well, he'll recover or he'll get better in a few months or in a few." You can't. We need medical help. You can't just basically play it off as something that'll just go or something that is minor and that goes within days or weeks. It doesn't. The thing is I've always been, since I was young, a very aggressive go-getter. So I've always been the type of person who would always want to go and get what I want. You know, it doesn't matter. I've always been like that. I've never been the type to sit back and, you know, let things happen. So for me, this was kind of like a big thing for me to deal with. The thing is I've always liked helping others as well. I got my college degree in May 2014 and involved working with the public, and I was, you know, very excited for that. But the thing is, after all this, everything that I've gone through, it's made it so it's like I felt like if I can't really help others, you know, if I can't really help myself through this, how can I help others? So it's definitely taking a big hit on that. The thing is this is a problem that everybody's experiencing. It's not just in the U.S. There's been thousands of people in Europe, thousands of people in Canada, and even in the Middle East and in South America. wherever it's being prescribed, they're having more and more cases of people with PFS. And, you know, I've had this, you could say my crash was in late September 2015, and now it's we're in January 2017. And the thing is, from experimenting with myself, the only thing that have really helped me through it has been anxiety medication. you know, I've taken that. I took HGH for a few months, which helped with sleep a lot, helped a lot with my sleep. I took light amounts of testosterone, but that didn't help. It didn't do much for my situation because of the fact that my body couldn't respond to it properly, so it was kind of pointless. Continued working out 5 days a week. I've continued, you know, my diet for the most part is decent. I have up and on and off days, but for the most part, you know, my diet, I try to keep it clean because that usually helps people with this condition. The thing is for any of you out there who just got it, it's I'm not gonna lie to you, it's not an easy condition, and it's probably one of the toughest things you'd ever have to go through in your life. But you know, with hopefully with enough media awareness and with putting it out there that there is help and that there is you know, that things will eventually get better. I felt the best thing to do with all this going on is just keep yourself, you know, busy with your lives. Don't stop enjoying doing what you're doing because you're dealing with this. And you know, keep your heads up. That's the best thing you can do. You know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things out there that are just not good for people's hormones. I mean, blocking DHT in the male body is catastrophic. You know, if you do it, you know, it's one thing if you have it in your scalp, but to go ahead and get, you know, get the DHT all over your body, it's just not, it's not good, because we need it for, we need DHT for cognitive function. We need DHT for spinal, for our joints. Our joints without DHT become very lax and easily damageable. Vision issues. That's one thing I've experienced. I've experienced blurry vision at times. I've also experienced, let's see, a lot of joint pain. Weird allergies to food. My stomach is very, very sensitive to certain foods now that it wasn't before. So I was kind of shocked by that because I've never had any trouble eating anything. But ever since PFS, my stomach's gotten a lot more sensitive to foods like the sugars, dairy products, so forth. The one thing I notice with postmenstrual tract syndrome is when I'm sleep deprived or, you know, later at night, there's certain times during the day that my symptoms lessen and that sometimes they get worse. So I think a big part of it has to do with our biological clocks in our body, what time of the day that we're that we have like our symptoms worsening or lessening. And there's been a few days where I've actually, you know, felt like a lot better. And I think, you know, that's you know, good, because that means that it's not something that you're stuck with. It doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a permanent condition. It can be very temporary if you do everything right and you try and diet right, you exercise, and you keep your head up about it and don't think about it too much, you know. But I do feel, in the end of the day, we do need a medical solution to this condition, because it's not an easy to fix condition. And you know, in the year and a half, what this has taught me, it's taught me a lot about, you know, helping others, trying to help other people, as difficult as it can be sometimes, because you have your own problems. It's, you know, it made me want to reach out and help other people with this condition and talk to them and offer as much help as I possibly could. You know, it's not an easy thing to go through, but as a community, we should definitely be together and unite. And if you can, there's so far Merck's got 1,500 lawsuits going against them. I'd encourage all of you to find a way. If you could possibly get an attorney and file a claim, I would encourage all of you to do that. That would definitely help. You know, I mean, this is something we got to put out there, not something that we can just sit back on and be like, oh, well, yeah, it's not a big deal or this and that. One other thing I wanted to touch on before this episode ends, they say the death count from PFS is only at, say, 70 or so. The truth and reality is it's a lot higher than that. But the problem is that there's a lot of money at play. So, you know, the pharmaceutical companies don't want to go say, oh, well, yeah, it's a lot higher, this and that. They're trying to alter the numbers, and they're trying to say that, oh, you know, there's other reasons for their death, such as this or that, or, you know, there are a lot of people will get it mixed up with depressive disorder when post-traumatic stress syndrome is completely different. They're both two totally different things. But a lot of them can't put two and two together, and it's very important that you differentiate between the two, because a lot of the symptoms from PFS mimic that of major depressive disorder. You know, so people got to understand that. The World Health Organization says there's been about 14,000 people with adverse effects to it, but the truth is the number is really much, much higher. We're talking probably tens of thousands, and the fatality count is probably in the low thousands. Easily. That's personally what I think about it. And I just believe that, you know, we got to stay on top of everything, and we got to do everything we can to get it out there and let people know, and to make it aware to the media that this is something that's very, very serious. Thank you. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to email me or so forth. That'll work. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.